From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. An estimated 20,000 surgeons in the U.S. are over 70, no more immune than the rest of us from weaker vision, slower hand-eye coordination, or forgetfulness. Yet there's not a clear system for telling a doctor it's time to retire from surgery. Dr. Mark Catlick, chair of surgery at LifeBridge Health Sinai Hospital, has devised a two-day evaluation to test the physical and mental fitness of surgeons. He says a mandatory retirement age is not the answer.
What we really need is some objective test that balances patient safety on one hand with the dignity of this committed surgeon on the other, and that surgeon as a resource to society.
We'll also talk to Dr. Herbert Dardick, who resisted the testing but now thinks it's needed. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Signs of aging are no secret. A person can experience hearing and vision impairment, cognitive decline, even sleep and balance disorders can develop as one gets older. How should the effects of aging be considered when someone's profession holds them responsible for another life? In some cases, there are checks in place. Airline pilots have a mandatory retirement age of 65. For many firefighters, it's 57. But what about surgeons? There are no regulations in place for retirement age or even mandatory cognitive testing requirements for those practicing surgery. Later in the program, we'll talk with a doctor who reluctantly but voluntarily underwent a screening developed in Baltimore to test his mental and physical abilities in order to continue his work as a vascular surgeon. Joining us in the studio now is Dr. Mark Catlick, who developed the test. He chairs the Department of Surgery at LifeBridge Health Sinai Hospital and also directs the Center for Geriatric Surgery. The test, called the Aging Surgeons Program, evaluates the physical and cognitive faculties of those practicing surgery. Welcome to On the Record, Dr. Catlick.
Thank you, Sheila.
What prompted you to develop the Aging Surgeons Program?
At Sinai, we have a Center for Geriatric Surgery. And I've always been interested in the special problems of older folks, so I may have been a little more sensitive to these types of issues. Also, as a chief of surgery, I occasionally encounter issues related to older surgeons. They're not always bad, they're not always good, but I was aware that there was no objective test of an aging surgeon's physical and cognitive faculties anywhere. And chiefs of surgery and hospital presidents often have to make hard decisions about surgeons' practices, and you really don't want to rely on simply hearsay to make those decisions. You're affecting someone's career, you're affecting patient safety, and so I felt we really needed some objective test or evaluation in order to help hospital administrators and chiefs of surgery make those tough decisions.
And before I ask you what's involved in the program you came up with and how you came up with it, let me unpack a little bit of what you just said. First of all, I think many listeners would assume that there is some kind of, I mean, after all, physicians need to be licensed, right? So isn't mm-hmm. someone keeping track of their skills and abilities?
Mm-hmm. Yes and no. And I guess the bottom line is, in my belief, not well enough yet. It is very difficult to become a surgeon. There are years and years of training, and there are certification examinations, both written and oral. But once one becomes a surgeon, it's actually relatively easy to continue to be a surgeon. There are recertification tests required every 10 years, which really are a test of knowledge. It's a computerized test in a secure environment, and each hospital has ongoing reviews of a surgeon's activity, but generally those fall into the range of within normal limits. You know, it's very difficult unless there are just egregious events happening. It's often very difficult to select surgeons that are really out of the norm. And so in in the past, a chief of surgery or a hospital vice president of medical affairs had to rely on the comments of operating room nurses or anesthesiologists or other surgeons. And again, that can be considered hearsay.
Yeah, you co-wrote an academic paper. I don't know which journal it appeared in.
The Annals of Surgery.
The Annals of Surgery. And it said that one of us, one of the authors, and I think those are your initials, sought anecdotes from members of the Society of Surgical Chairs and was told, quote, he fell asleep taking down the internal mammary artery, close quote, had to organize an intervention led by other senior retired surgeons, close quote. Quote, operating room nurses were in tears in my office saying you need to stop him, close quote. Really? You heard all those comments?
From other chairs of surgery and more. One senior surgeon had to be shown how to get back to his office by a surgical resident. When I speak about this subject and ask my audience who in the audience has encountered a surgeon who should have stopped operating before he or she did, the majority of hands in the audience go up among other doctors, medical students, hospital administrators. And so it does happen. It does happen, unfortunately. Frankly, we're really not policing ourselves as well as we should.
And so I'm sure some of our listeners are saying, okay, mandatory retirement age, like airline pilots.
Mandatory retirement age would be a very simple, straightforward solution to this. However, although human faculties deteriorate with increasing age, the variability among individuals actually increases dramatically with increasing age. So if we test a number of 40-year-olds, they're not too different. If we test 70 or 80-year-olds, there are great differences. Now, it's true, in terms of patient safety, a mandatory retirement age would solve the problem. However, there are communities that have only one older surgeon as their surgeon. You know, there are counties in the United States that have no surgeons or one surgeon, and that surgeon may be 70 years old. And so, even in terms of patient safety, it may not always be best to deny that surgeon the opportunity to operate and to take care of patients. And so what we really need is some objective test that balances patient safety on one hand with the dignity of this committed surgeon on the other, and that surgeon as a resource to society. And so mandatory retirement age, while straightforward and a simple solution, is both scientifically unsound because of the great variability among individuals, and it may even be considered unfair to those surgeons who are capable.
That's Dr. Mark Ketlick, chairman of the Department of Surgery at LifeBridge Health Sinai Hospital. Here on The Record on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the Aging Surgeons Program he developed to evaluate the physical and cognitive abilities of surgeons as they get older. So what does this evaluation consist of?
It's a 2-day comprehensive evaluation. And I should point out that it took us a year to develop this in a multidisciplinary fashion with our chairman of internal medicine and physical medicine rehabilitation, ophthalmology. We had hospital lawyers, ethicists, nurses, physical therapists. And so we built the best possible evaluation that we thought we could. And so a surgeon will drive or take a train or fly into Baltimore and get a room at a neighboring hotel. They'll come in on Monday morning at 8 o'clock and have a general physical exam, a neurology exam, and then 2 hours of physical and occupational medicine testing. And these are tests of hand-eye coordination, fine motor skills, balance. These are standardized tests that have been done for years by our experienced physical medicine people. And then they'll have a nice lunch and then spend an entire afternoon of neurocognitive testing by our PhD neuropsychologists. These two are standardized tests that have been done for years, and they measure attention, memory, emotional levels even, frustration levels. And then the surgeon will go out on his own to have a nice dinner in Baltimore, come back in on a Tuesday morning, have more neurocognitive testing, more physical and occupational medicine testing, then a comprehensive eye examination, and then they leave by mid-afternoon. Each of our examiners prepares a comprehensive report in his or her area, and then we meet on a Friday afternoon as a group and prepare an executive summary.
That sounds exhausting on all sides.
It is exhausting, and I'm sure that when you speak with Dr. Dardick later, he'll confirm that. It's a little bit of a stress test, but on the other hand, surgery is a stressful occupation.
What overall has been the response to the program?
We have had international interest in the program. Any country that doesn't have a mandatory retirement age, and by the way, some countries do for surgeons, but any country that does not is interested in this subject and is grappling with this issue. I've been contacted by the president of the Swiss Surgical Association. I was invited to speak by the Royal College of Surgeons of England. And have received inquiries from almost every state in the United States. Now, we have really only had two people actually come through the program, however.
Only two surgeons have been evaluated.
Yes.
Formally.
We have heard anecdotally that as many as a half dozen others have voluntarily retired from the operating room when, quote, threatened, unquote, with our evaluation. But we've actually only had two surgeons come through the program.
And you've been operating 2.5 years.
Yes.
You've been running this program.
Mm-hmm.
So if so few surgeons are going through it, even counting in the ones who backed off mm-hmm. because of what they thought the testing would find, can you really say that self-policing is working?
Not yet. I should also point out, however, that there is growing interest in medical organizations related to this subject. The American College of Surgeons developed a policy related to aging surgeons. Now, I believe that the policy could be tougher than it is, but it's a good first step. And that policy states that they recommend that a surgeon between the ages of 65 and 70 undergo a physical examination, an eye examination, and a neurocognitive screening evaluation. But the American College of Surgeon policy is voluntary.
Completely voluntary.
Yes.
And, I mean, the impression you're leaving me with at this point is that surgeons themselves are just looking the other way, that they're saying, I probably don't have a problem. And if someone suggests testing, they don't like that idea.
Well, I believe that there are some surgeons who believe that they can be the best judge of their abilities. Yes, that's true. And no one says that surgeons are short of ego. But there are many other surgeons who have contacted me individually and asked about putting themselves through the evaluation.
Have they done it?
They have not yet, but we have one I believe will. So I would say you're correct. It is still a potential problem. Now, hospitals are dealing with this problem, and their chiefs of surgery making difficult decisions, you know, every week, every month, every year about older surgeons. However, I believe that some form of objective testing would help them make those decisions. And I think our national organizations can still do better than we're doing.
What about legislation? Is there any legislation under consideration, either federal or state, that would address retirement ages?
There is none that I'm aware of. And again, I personally don't believe that there should be, because that type of mandatory legislation would likely end up with a mandatory retirement age. Now, I suppose an intermediate option would be mandatory testing of some type. Hospitals, some forward-thinking hospitals, have begun instituting late career practitioner policies. We have one at Sinai Hospital and at Northwest Hospital in Baltimore.
What is that?
And that's a policy whereby any physician or nurse practitioner or physician assistant, upon reaching age 75, must have a physical, an eye exam, and a neurocognitive screening evaluation when they come up for recredentialing. Now, if every hospital in the country had that type of policy, it would at least screen for some of these issues.
Very interesting. Dr. Mark Katlick chairs the Department of Surgery at LifeBridge Health Sinai Hospital. We're talking about the aging surgeons program he developed to evaluate the physical and cognitive abilities of surgeons as they age. We're going to take a quick break now, and after the break, Dr. Katlick and I will be joined by a vascular surgeon who was at first against the idea of testing and then became a proponent. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today with Dr. Mark Katlick, chairman of the Department of Surgery at LifeBridge Health Sinai Hospital. He designed a test to evaluate the cognitive and physical abilities of surgeons as they age. And joining us now by phone from Englewood Hospital and Medical Center in New Jersey is Dr. Herbert Dardick. He's chief emeritus of vascular surgery and general surgery there. In addition, at age 82, Dr. Dardick runs student and resident programs and a research lab. He changed his thinking about aging surgeon evaluation after he went through it in 2015 and passed it. Dr. Dardick, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What happened that you were asked to undergo an evaluation to continue practice?
Well, let me start at the beginning. About 2 years ago, I had a relatively minor surgical procedure performed on me, and I had a patient scheduled for a carotid endarterectomy about 2 weeks afterward, and I thought it might not be the appropriate or optimal thing for me to just go in there and operate, though I felt I could. And I discussed this with the patient, and she was very disappointed, but we made a deal that she would have the surgeon who I assigned to the case do it as long as I was in the room. And I kept my end of the bargain, and I sat there. Truthfully, I was really quite bored. And during the procedure, I kind of dozed a bit. And this alarmed the nurse anesthetist in the room, who immediately called the chief of anesthesia, who then escorted me back to my office, which is in the hospital. And we had a discussion, oh, maybe I'm getting to a point where I should reconsider. And I looked at him and gave him a nasty look, and that was the end. 2 days later, he marched into the office with the chief medical officer and started a whole case with me about maybe it's time, I should cut down, or whatever. Well, as Dr. Catlett pointed out, I'm one of those surgeons who thought that I know better than anyone else about what I can do or shouldn't do. And I got so angry, I literally threw them out of my office. The following week, I was off at a meeting, and I was sitting in the airplane. And it just hit me when I saw the pilot walking in, who was relatively young, that, oh, young fellow, that's good. But what if he were 80, 81, 82? I think I would be much more comfortable as a passenger if I knew he had just been checked out and approved. That did a real turnabout for me, that thinking, and I came back to the hospital and told them, you know, you wanted me to take this particular test. I'd be willing to do it. And I did do it.
I want to ask you about the test,
sure.
but let me first ask Dr. Katlick whether this story that Dr. Dardick tells echoes what you hear in other cases.
It echoes many of the things that I hear, but most are not as savvy as Dr. Dardick or as concerned about his patients to have had the change of heart.
So that's right. That's the difference, but for the initial reaction is very similar.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. Very few surgeons want to be told that they're not perfect.
That's correct.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Dr. Herbert Dardick, Chief Emeritus of Vascular Surgery and General Surgery at Englewood Hospital and Medical Center in New Jersey, and Dr. Mark Catlick, who chairs the Department of Surgery at LifeBridge Health Sinai Hospital here in Baltimore. We're talking about testing to evaluate the physical and cognitive abilities of surgeons. So, Dr. Dardick, tell me about your evaluation and how you reacted to it.
It was challenging, exhausting. Parts of it were fun. Parts of it were a little, kind of got frustrated at a few points.
Why?
I didn't realize the intensity of the cognitive part, but when I saw what was coming, I really buckled my head down and figured I'm going to take this on. And it was, I thought, a terrific program. The examination part, when I had my eyes examined, I realized, you know, no one really ever does that. And we all rely on the volunteer heroism of a surgeon to go get himself checked. But the reality is, what if my vision was getting poor? And that hit me very strongly. So my only problem, I thought, with the program was, maybe not a problem, was that perhaps 2 days was a bit much and exhausting. But nonetheless, I do think that all the different parts are critical. The physical, the memory, the figuring out challenging problems, that's what we have to do in the operating room. And if we slip and go the wrong direction, which I have seen many times, we are doing exactly the opposite of what we're supposed to be. I think this is a critically vital program, and I guess I have made a 180-degree turn, because I went from total hostility to any challenge to me to now sitting at the other end thinking this should be done for everyone over certain ages. I think Dr. Catlett is absolutely right. The variability has to be considered in this, and that is challenging, but it can be done and should be done.
Did you make changes in your own practice based on the executive summary you got from?
I have, actually, because since Baltimore, I've developed a bit of a back problem.
Oh,
and
I'm sorry.
I was still operating, and I realized after a few of those cases where I was uncomfortable that I was not doing an honest thing by operating and making decisions when my back was bothering me, because that influences, maybe without me even realizing it, what I'm doing. So since then, I've actually cut down and am on the verge of turning over my practice to the young vascular surgeon who took my place as chief of the department. What I'm shifting towards now, because I still enjoy coming to work and the hospital is in my blood, is I deal with the residents and the medical students every day. I have a very active animal research laboratory, and I also have program with one of our major high schools in the area where students who are interested in medicine come through here on shadow programs and research programs and learning how to write programs. So I'm busy.
Dr. Catlick, something like a quarter of surgeons in the country are over 65, and that percentage is only going to grow. So do you expect to get more inquiries and expect wider acceptance of evaluation?
I think the major societies are interested in this. The American Medical Association is studying it. The American College of Surgeons already came up with at least the first iteration of a policy. And so there's no question it's now on the radar. However, I believe that that this program and others like it will help the public understand the issue, and there may be some impetus there or some pressure for us all to take this more seriously.
We'll have to see how it unfolds. I'm grateful to you both for laying it out for us. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You're welcome, and my pleasure.
Dr. Herbert Dardick is Chief Emeritus of Vascular Surgery and General Surgery at Englewood Hospital and Medical Center in New Jersey. This year, the Society of Vascular Surgeons gave him its highest honor, its Lifetime Achievement Award. Dr. Mark Catlett chairs the Department of Surgery at LifeBridge Health Sinai Hospital and directs the Center for Geriatric Surgery there. We've been discussing his program for testing the physical and cognitive abilities of aging surgeons to ensure patient safety. If you'd like to find out more about it, we have a link to Dr. Catlett's Aging Surgeon Program at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.